Welcome to The Rescued Horse, hosted by Don Harmon. The horse was endangered. For 36 hours, Susan Pierce and a friend tried to save him. The horse was so sick and emancipated that the emergency vet recommended they offer him the only gift they could. That was the defining moment that changed Susan's life. Hello, Susan.
Hi there. How are you?
Good. How did that change your life?
Oh, well, it certainly opened my eyes to what was actually happening with horses. I've been a horsewoman my whole life, and I had a fantasy that they were revered and treasured. And I had been completely unaware of how much pain, suffering, and commoditization actually occurred with horses.
Yeah. About Bilek. Where did you find him?
Bilek? He was, Bilek's a kind of a funny horse for us because we had been asked to leave our prior home, and we're given basically 3 months to find a new ranch. And I never, ever wanted to be in that situation again. At that time, we had 65 horses where their safety and security was up in the air or their home was jeopardized. And so we made a very clear decision that we needed to buy a place. And so we really did a very large campaign. And thanks to the Orange County Register for printing so many of our stories, we were able to raise a down payment in Chino Hills for Red Bucket and the ranch the horses own. And when we were just here, we moved in June of 2012. And in the very first weekend in July, we received a distress call that there was an emaciated, older, starving, dehydrated horse that had been dumped in a riverbed. And we immediately hooked our trailer up and went to get him. And that was extremely empowering for us because in our prior situation, we didn't have the empowerment, of being able to actually go and get a horse. And so Bilek was the very first horse that we rescued when we came to Chino Hills. And I have to tell you, that horse was absolutely emaciated. He always had allergies and skin problems, and his whole face basically had been infected and oozy and scalded from the barrage of flies that had eaten his face. They had taken everything from him, even his halter. And his body was full of fly bites, and honestly, he was much more of a skeleton than he was a horse. And we went and we picked him up, and we spent the next several months caring for him and slowly refeeding him. We have a refeeding program that we use. And then we spent the remaining 5 years every single day trying to make up for the pain and suffering that he had endured. Even his legs were full of raw rope burns where he had been roped.
When you first climbed down into that dry riverbed, did you know then how you were going to get... He obviously couldn't get up and just walk out of there. Did you know what you were going to do?
Yeah, kind of a nice thing about Red Bucket is we have a reputation and a network. And the person who contacted us actually went and pulled him out of the ravine. He was in a dry wash that, by the way, is known for horses getting dumped in. And by the time she got him out of the wash, it was about 20 minutes from here. We were hooked up, and we just basically picked him up. And it's funny, you would be surprised how many times we've done that. Been notified that a horse has been abandoned in a dry riverbed like that. It happens frequently. And whenever we go and pick them up, we've never had a problem, no matter how weak the horse is loading them. I think somehow they just know that wherever they're going has to be better, than where they were.
When you finally got back to the ranch and things kind of settled down, what was a short list of the first things that you needed to overcome with Bilek?
Well, the first thing that we do is we do a physical assessment and an intake on the horse. because pretty quickly we have to put together a plan on refeeding. We contact our vet. We isolate the horse because we don't really know what the horse has been exposed to, and we have a great population of horses on our ranch. So oftentimes it's more an issue of protecting the new compromised horse from our healthy horses, you know, because you never know how really weakened the immune system is. So we isolate the horse, and then we do an assessment. We weigh them. We take all of their vital signs. We inspect them and apply, you know, first aid immediately. And then depending upon how poor condition the horse is, we either take them into a normal vet appointment or we'll get an emergency vet out. We definitely have developed a sweet spot for understanding how to take these three compromised horses and very slowly put them on a refeeding program. And you do it very, very slowly for a number of different reasons. And then we have to, of course, hydrate the horse. And so, you know, we applied first aid, and then we determined his feeding program. And Belek was put on 9 very small meals equally spaced throughout the day. So, again, our program is a 24/7 program. There's nothing that's convenient for us. It's all about serving, you know, the horses who come to us, you know, for help. And so that's basically how we started. His poor little face was so scalded that we gently, you know, had to clean all of that off and apply non-steroidal eye ointment to his eyes, and, you know, of course, cover his face with a, you know, a long fly mask. And then we observed them very closely. We're always afraid, you know, of a horse being distressed or even colicking, you know, once you start to refeed them. So we do everything very slowly. And because Belek, you know, was an older horse, we included a lot of wet, soft food to his small meals to allow as much nutrition as possible.
And in the months to come, as he began to recover, how was his mind? I mean, horses, I know, have a better memory than most people realize. And I wonder what his memory of before you, if that was baggage that he brought along with him. I mean, were there things that he wouldn't let you do with him, or any display?
It's a great question, and that is a really complex answer. So for horses who have come to us that have been abused, a great many of them have post-traumatic stress. And people don't even think about that for the horses. You know, they have post-traumatic stress, and you can see the manifestation behaviorally in the horse. You know, a lot of times horses will become anxious about being fed. You know, they've never not been fed at all, and all of a sudden they're getting fed. For Belek, there was some, you know, a low-level anxiety about meal times. You know, but they're also very intelligent and smart, and they respond well, as you know, to a routine. And so the most important thing for us is to keep our routine very solid. We have a no-drama policy here, so it's very, very peaceful for the horses. So for Belek, he really adjusted to that. He surrendered to it without really trusting it initially. And, you know, it seemed, if I look back on the years, it seemed like it was a good 6 months before I really started to see his eyes soften and some of those worry marks go away. We started to incorporate very light exercise. And when I say light exercise, I'm talking about passive hand walks, you know, slow periods of, you know, a little bit of grazing, you know, just kind of allowing him to walk around the property. We have a beautiful ranch to see the other horses and to start to begin the socialization process, which is also very important. He loved being touched, and he almost craved it. And the first thing that we really noticed behaviorally about him, more so than even a desire to eat, was a desire to be touched. So we had to be careful with that because, of course, you know, he not only had open wounds and you know, some skin issues, but he also was skeletal. And so touching him, we had to be careful where we could touch him. But he loved a soft brush, one of those really small little goatskin brushes. We just very gently, with long strokes, would start to just kind of gently stroke him. And he'd drop his head, and he loved to have his brow gently caressed. And then, you know, you start to see the horse awaken and realize that mankind or humankind is good, and that when we approach them, we bring pleasure instead of pain. You know, we bring food instead of a demand. And, you know, the other thing is that his life became free from expectation. We had no expectation of him. He had been roped. And what happens in this particular community is that for sport, people will start to rope the horses. And, you know, horses will obviously fight back for a while, which makes it, I guess, fun and pleasurable for the person who's roping them. But it's very painful because as they rope the horse's back pasterns, they develop thick welts, which become very raw. And the horses are smart. They, once they get roped, they all of a sudden will stop, and they're not going to fight anymore because it's so painful. And then that's no fun. So then they haven't been feeding the horse to begin with because they don't find value in a horse. And this is a very old horse that clearly really couldn't be ridden anymore. And they just, you know, discard them. So the, what, you know, what we do here at Red Bucket, you know, we're really rather unique in our mission. And, you know, our mission has three parts. We save and rehabilitate horses. These are high-risk horses that have been abused, you know, and really suffered unspeakable, you know, trauma to their life. The third part of our mission is a forever home. And it's the middle of our mission where we do our work. And I think the most important part there is time. You know, we give the horses time to heal, and it's their time. We're not putting any kind of a time constraint on it. We're listening to them. You know, when they tell us they're ready to go out in the pasture for a turnout and to graze, that's when they go out. When they tell us they're ready for socialization, that's when they become socialized. And, you know, we have a process for integrating our horses into herds, which is a very big part of our program, our enrichment program for the horses, because, of course, they're so social. Many of these horses have never had that opportunity in their life to live safely as horses. And so we'll put the horse in a catch pen that's within the inside of one of our small pastures. And then we can watch the horse's interaction over the fence. So we can see, you know, make sure it's safe and make sure that the horse is compatible. And then we allow the horse out to be integrated with a herd. We had to be very careful with Felix because he was very fragile. And he wasn't super steady on his feet. And so we tend to put him with older, very docile horses. And in the long run, he ended up being a companion with an older donkey named Dame Blossom. And he was extremely bonded with her, and she became his socialization. So they became a herd of two, and he had a really lovely stall inside the barn because he did require more protection from the elements. And then he had a double paddock. So he had the option of being inside or outside. He could choose that. And he was always with his donkey. So even when he went out for his enrichment time, he would go out with that donkey, and they were very, very bonded.
So Bilak, I'm beginning to get the sense, never reached a point of a considered adoption. Is that true?
Yeah, you know, initially, you know, our goal, again, the third part of our mission, all of our work is in service to the third part of our mission, and that is a forever home for the horses. A horse like Bilak, you know, initially we have the fantasy of restoring his health and his trust in humankind, and then finding him an appropriate forever home. As he became more aware to us, as we understood him, and he became more secure here and connected with Blossom, it was very obvious to us that moving him would not be in his best interest. But a lot of times when the horses are older, and Belek really was probably at least in his early, maybe 30 or so when we bought him. He was a little older than we thought he was initially. They're like older people. Change is very hard for them. And I think it's safe to assume that the greatest part of Belek's life before he came to us was filled with uncertainty, abuse, and neglect, and fear. And so once he became embedded, in the Red Bucket culture and his new home, it became aware that we could not place him and have, it's just not fair to him. And then, of course, he had some health issues that required quite a bit of care. And our policy is never to place a horse that has a behavioral or a health problem. And he had COPD. He had horrible, skin problems. And, he became fairly neurologic as he aged. And he was not a horse that our board or our operating committee determined was a good adoption candidate. And so basically we adopted him as a permanent resident and devoted ourselves to his daily care and enrichment. He had a guardian named Andrea. We have a guardian program so that the horses who end up staying here because they're not good candidates for adoption, he had his own person, and she was very devoted to him, and would bring him little treats and spend time, with him daily. And he also was a horse that required daily first aid. And she was a big part of that. So I think if you were to ask me, he would say that he had a forever home and he had his own person and he had his own family. And so I guess as a rescuer and the head of Red Bucket, I would say mission accomplished.
I do know that he recently passed. How long did you have him?
5 years. So it's actually kind of difficult to have a conversation. It's been extremely emotional for us. We, of course, it was not a surprise. He's a very, very geriatric horse, and we had he had been a frequent patient of our veterinarian, so he was under daily care, and his quality of life had been good. Certainly, he was still enjoying his daily enrichment. We had him for 5 years, so he passed just a few days shy of that five-year anniversary when we went and pulled him out of the riverbed and made a promise to him. And, of course, that promise was for forever. Yeah. And that's what we gave him.
Susan and Belek. Are there any last thoughts you'd like to leave us with?
I think there are so many. I think that the rescued horse is misunderstood. I think when people come to Red Bucket, and I really welcome visitors here, we have visiting hours every Sunday from 1 to 4. We are very different in that our model of rescue, we know that the greater percentage of horses that are rescued and adopted, sometimes up to 88% are returned back to the slaughter or the abuse pipeline. So our process is very different in terms of the amount of time that we take to assess and rehabilitate our horses. We provide training, so none of our horses leave here without the proper training. And then we maintain title for our horses for their lifetime, which means that promise of forever really is forever. And while we have very few horses that come back to Red Bucket, and typically it's only because of a family situation or a health situation, they'll always come back, and we guarantee their lives, and we take that very seriously. And our work is, is expensive. That's why these horses end up in so much trouble. People underestimate the amount of care and resources that they require. And we are a 501c3 nonprofit organization, and our work is really dependent upon like-minded people who are compassionate, who financially support us and our ability to provide homes for Bielik or the 148 other horses who we have here who have saved and we're currently serving.
Susan, thank you. Thank you so much for what you do. There are so many abused horses out there living in fear and pain. Bielik was one of the lucky ones. Susan Pierce is the founder and the current director of the Red Bucket Equine Rescue. Their website is loaded with horse care and adoption information. Give them a call. Good day.